From the moment you get up in the morning until your last waking moment at night, you can spend the day just saturated in media. And this is even without leaving the TV or the radio on, because the ubiquitous smartphone is around. So there's always plenty to discuss when we gather our media panel for the podcast we call Signals and Noise. Our panelists this time are regular Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein on the Journalism and Mass Communication faculty at Cal Poly Humboldt. Welcome back, Jesse.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Chris Lucas is back from Southern Oregon University Communication Faculty, stepping in this month to cover for Eric Palmer. Chris, good to have you back.
Good morning.
So debating yesterday about what to start with, I was debating dropping off the idea of talking about Ronna Romney McDaniel, the former chair of the Republican National Committee at NBC News. And then just about the time I was really making a decision, that's when we learned that NBC News let her go after about 4 days. I mean, so we have had other political operatives. I'm not just talking about the government journalism revolving door, but, you know, people who are overtly political figures, Rick Santorum, Donna Brazile come to mind, hired by TV networks in the past for commentators. What made the hiring of this political operative, Jesse, different from previous hirings of political operatives?
A few different things on this one. And you're right, we've seen similar situations in the past, but this one actually ended up being kind of unprecedented. And one of the main differences was just that she's sort of this really polarizing figure because she did a lot of perpetuating of lies about the 2020 presidential election, saying it was rigged, among other things. And then also, it was really clear that that the actual journalists and the boots on the ground and the anchors, those who are working for NBC News, were obviously not consulted on this at all. And it was a decision made by the higher ups. And so there was this huge backlash. And that was really the big difference there. Sort of shining light on the fact that there was a serious credibility problem there, and that, you know, coming from the actual journalists, they kind of just really did a giant pushback and said, no, this is not okay.
One of the major events in there was Kristen Welker bringing Ronna Romney McDaniel on to meet the press as a guest, and maybe she thought it was going to be an introductory segment, did McDaniel, but Kristen Welker grilled her pretty well and asked about her, the fact that she had not until that moment said that Joe Biden's the legitimate president. I mean, what did you make of all you saw here, Chris Lucas?
That was quite a moment, and then followed up by Chuck Todd, the previous host, longtime host of Meet the Press, really calling out the brass in NBC in a way I've never seen on live air before. That was pretty amazing. One thing I think about as I look at the story is this gap between some of the ways that we as an audience look at these news organizations and the ways that they see themselves. I think from the outside we see, well, it's just, there's MSNBC and NBC and Meet the Press. It's all just the news. But for people who work inside of these shows, they don't see them as one big mass, right? They see, the Meet the Press has been on the air since 1947, and it has this very, it has its own sense of, what that show means, and a sense of pride of its sort of centrist credentials, however we want to feel about that. And it's always been staffed by journalists who, really pride themselves on a sense of independence from the partisan battles going on around them. And so over the last couple of years, we've seen those brands, if you will, within these news organizations like Meet the Press start to splinter. Now there's like a lot of different Meet the Press branded programming. And at the center is this show, which has, a bit of a longstanding reputation, if only in its own mind. And so when I saw that kind of battle erupt, that's really what I realized, is that there's actually this tension within these institutions about, what does journalism mean? What are the obligations of the people within the shows to the people they bring into those shows? So there's definitely a broader picture here.
Chris Lucas and Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein are back, our panelists for the latest edition of Signals and Noise. If you got some questions or comments to share with us about things going on in the media, join us by email, jx@jeffnet.org. To that particular part of the pushback, Jesse, can you recall any time when you saw the people from a news organization be so vocal in calling out the decisions of the management of the news organization, particularly in hiring?
You know, it has happened, but not to this degree, and not taking place on air in front of the American public. You know, so there things had happened, you know, behind closed doors before, but this was really, really unprecedented for that reason, that it was right there in our faces, you know, happening, you know, sometimes live on air, going out to all of our living rooms, watching it happen. So, you know, that was another big difference there. I actually really appreciated a quote from, it was David Jurewicz said, it was 2 days of the most aggressive public and passionate pushback by employees against a decision by their bosses that I have ever seen in 35 years of covering the media. And I just went, yeah, it really is. it was aggressive. It was public. It was passionate. It was all of those things. And, you know, in many ways now this created a lot of problems, or it's going to create a lot of problems for NBC, because now there's this lack of trust in leadership by the NBC and MSNBC journalists, right? Because the higher ups, the executives went and did this without consulting, without vetting McDaniel, without vetting her beforehand in a way that was kind of sticking with journalistic principles. So there's that lack of trust is there now, but then also, you know, they brought her on to represent different viewpoints, which is something that journalists need to do, right? To tell multiple sides of the story. And so bringing her on to sort of represent, the Republican voice and Republican viewpoints was the point of that. But now we have this situation where, you know, how do we even do that when so many of the kind of MAGA Trump faction of Republicans, are sort of pushing and propagating the fake news and, you know, saying, you know, sort of supporting the January 6th insurrection, or saying that the election was rigged, and, you know, perpetuating those narratives over and over again. Then, you know, how do you walk that line of, well, we need it to be factual. This is supposed to be journalism, but how do we get people from that, you know, MAGA Trump supporting side to do that? And so I think NBC is really going to have to figure out how to come back from this one and figure out how to resolve that issue.
Let's take up another topic on signals and noise. And this is the request of the Supreme Court to consider cases in which governments, in this case, state laws are involved, can get involved in social media organizations taking down information they see as incorrect or dangerous. Chris, why don't you walk us into the specifics here?
This case was just heard, argued before the Supreme Court, and it goes back to 2021 when the Biden administration started asking social media companies to restrict misinformation about the COVID-19 vaccine, which was really starting to propagate widely. There were some officials, some attorney generals from Missouri and Louisiana, along with some other folks, regular civilians whose posts were taken down. And they ultimately, you know, went to court, making the argument that the government had overstepped its, you know, First Amendment restrictions to try to take this material down. And this worked its way toward the Supreme Court and was just heard. And I think, you know, my sense of where the argument went is it was not, The Supreme seems pretty skeptical of the claims of the plaintiffs here, and seem like they think the government should play some role in trying to manage information people are seeing.
Jesse, I kind of come back to getting your voice in my head about what censorship is and what it is not. When the government stops you from saying something, that is censorship. When they ask you, where does that fall?
Oh man, that's why this has gone to the Supreme Court, right? Because it is sort of a bit of a gray area, and it depends on, you know, it depends on who's doing the asking, and obviously who's doing the sort of requiring if it goes into law, but also what the platform is, and that's something that's actually really important to these cases right now. So with newspapers, newspapers have free speech rights. They have the right to make their own editorial choices, their own editorial decisions. And in that medium, in that form of media, those rights are built in now. That's part of the law. Now, something like a phone company, they're really just transmitting messages, right? They're transmitting other people's speech. They don't have those same protections. They don't have the same right to free speech. And with social media and you know, in the age of the internet, we're still trying to figure out, well, where does social media fall? Is it more on the newspaper end of things, where, yeah, governments don't get to control that content, the newspaper's editorial staff does? Or is it more on the end of media in the form of a phone company where, you know, we're all creating content and putting it on this platform of social media, but it's sort of more of a public, you know, or is it that phone company aspect of they're just transmitting our speech as, you know, as people, as public, as the government? And that's really, you know, it's sort of a tough one to discern. Where does that fall? Because, you know, I can certainly see both sides of that where, you know, either way, you know, we don't want social media to be allowing hate speech and creating problems in our communities and in society. And also, you know, we don't want censorship. So really, that's the platform itself has a lot to do with it.
This is Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange. Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein from Cal Poly Humboldt and Chris Lucas from Southern Oregon University talking about events in the media. Let's move on to one quickie item. Let's try to get this one out of the way in about a minute or two. But it's about streamers starting to put their programs on broadcast and cable TV. Chris Lucas, if I'm paying for Hulu, how am I feeling about seeing Only Murders in the Building on ABC?
I hope you enjoy it wherever you see it, because you probably don't get a whole lot of say in that. The reality is all of these streamers have moved really firmly into becoming, you know, studios and producers themselves. That's been a pretty clear trajectory for a while. I mean, Netflix is a streamer, but it has production, you know, outfits all over the world. It just is spending $1 billion in New Jersey right now, building a studio just outside New York City. So at this point, you know, the work they're doing is to create content. And if they're a content creator, they're going to be looking for as many outlets as possible to show it, you know, especially as it's clear that the paying audience for subscription of streaming is pretty saturated and profits are falling. So they're looking for new sources of revenue, which means selling their content to other outlets.
Yeah, to the profit part of that, Jesse, I was surprised this week that, and it was in the business pages too, and as well as the media stuff, about the fact that there's a lot of pressure from the various companies to make some profits on your streaming stuff because they don't really get there.
Yeah, and, you know, there's sort of a pushback in audience as well. Chris just kind of mentioned this, but a lot of audiences are kind of leaning back toward linear channels, right? Like the markets are too saturated in the streaming world. People don't know what to watch. It's overwhelming. You know, there's all these jokes about how it's, you know, you spend all your watching time just trying to decide what to watch. And so those linear channels, there is something to that. And recently Nielsen even came out saying that broadcast and cable combined is like over 50% of all U.S. TV usage now. I think that was just last month, February of 2024. And so, you know, as far as profit goes, there's still profit in the more traditional linear broadcast channels.
All right, we have about a minute then for the total time for pick three. Jesse, why don't you give us your pick three media choices for the month?
All right, my super quick pick three. I am very much looking forward to Beyonce's new album, Cowboy Carter. It's being touted as country, but as Beyonce says, this ain't a country album. This is a Beyonce album. and then I sort of dove into Black artists in country music, and there's a great National Geographic article that is called How Black Artists Helped Make Country Music What It Is Today that came out earlier this month. And then right now is it's the Adobe Summit 2024, and so Adobe is launching lots of new AI stuff. And right now, the Adobe Gen Studio platform is looking really interesting. It's basically an AI factory.
All right. So Beyonce, National Geographic on Black artists and country music, and Adobe Summit 2024. Chris Lucas, your pick three.
I recently discovered the movie Reality on HBO, which is the story of reality winner. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, she was the whistleblower that, you know, it's a really interesting kind of docudrama, documentary reality sort of hybrid, really interesting, just called Reality. I also really wanted to shout out the film Past Lives, which was up for an Oscar. I only recently saw it, directed by Celine Song. It's just a really quiet, lovely, beautiful film on Prime and Apple. And then I'm reading right now, speaking of journalism, a book by a BBC presenter named Ross Atkins, and the book's called The Art of Explanation. And it's just a really concise kind of way, explanation of how he boils down complex information into really understandable language.
Okay, great list, great discussion. Thank you both, Chris Lucas from the Communication Program at Southern Oregon University. Always a pleasure.
Thanks very much.
Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein from Cal Poly Humboldt's Mass Communication and Journalism Program. Thank you again.
Thank you.